listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108. It's another Sunday morning, and time now for the Carol Cox program here on K108. And this morning, Carol has in the studio Alfonso Bragg, and we'll be talking with Mr. Bragg as Carol comes in. Hi, Carol.
Hey, good morning, Francis. Thank you. And Alfonso, thank you for joining us. Mr. Alfonso Bragg is the president of the NAACP here in Honolulu, the Honolulu chapter. And thought I would invite him in, and we have such a holiday spirit and all, and there are many things that are out there with issues impacting people, civil rights, and issues of that causes some concern. And so I thought I would invite him and share with the public out there and highlight some of the good work that the NAACP is doing and has done. I have to be honest with you, I owe a great portion of my success or well-being to the efforts of the NAACP, and I'm quite proud to acknowledge that always. So said all of that, Alfonso, good morning, and thank you for joining.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show today.
All right. Tell us about your position here and what you do with the NAACP and how it relates to the national level, and if you would, and anything you'd like to.
Well, certainly. Thank you. And with respect to our organizational structure, the Honolulu, Hawaii branch reports to the national office, and the national organization is managed or run by a 64-member board.
Mm-hmm.
Administratively, we have at the helm of the NAACP nationally a president and a CEO, who run the day-to-day operations. Our policy decisions are made by the membership. And we put referendums, resolutions forward, which we discuss at our annual national convention, and those are then ratified by the national board and subsequently become policy. The local branch here in Honolulu has been in organization since May of 1961. It was the NAACP originally came to Hawaii around World War II when there were a lot of reports of discrimination, racism, harassment, and treatment of American military personnel and government workers who were assigned here in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, it wasn't the president and CEO, it was the field secretary. Walter White came out to Hawaii, did a site visit, and they structured the first chapter, or now called branch, of the NAACP here in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are a great many people that I come in contact with, and they are under the assumption that the NAACP only serves people of color, quote, of color.
Mm-hmm.
Can you offer some insight in anything that would correct that thinking?
Okay, I'm happy to expound on that. First and foremost, the land sweeping changes with respect to all persons' rights, particularly civil rights across this nation, have in some way, shape, or form been because of the committed efforts of the NAACP. And that those benefactors have been all people. The individuals for whom we serve are all persons. At the forming time, around the 1909, when this was organized, it was said colored people because it was intended to represent the most disenfranchised group of persons, which happened to have been people of color.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to civil rights, the NAACP does not turn its door against any person, citizen or non-citizen. If you are a human being and you are being disenfranchised or your rights are being violated, we provide assistance to you. Now, I'll emphasize that here in Hawaii, we have the greatest opportunity to demonstrate that broad spectrum of individuals we serve,
mm-hmm.
because we serve Caucasians, we serve Asians, we serve Latino, Hispanic individuals, all persons of color.
And the makeup of the NAACP chapter here represents mm-hmm. that, I assume, a great
our,
many people of color, and whites and others.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Our structure here in Hawaii is clearly reflective of the population in Hawaii. It is extremely
mm-hmm.
diverse.
So one could best describe it as civil rights advocacy for all people, not just a one particular point.
And that's a good analogy. It is clearly a civil rights advocacy group that has been representing and will continue to be representing all persons.
Mm-hmm. So racial discrimination, you would be open to and receiving and assisting those that your agency can afford or what have you, that won't be turned away?
Of course.
Okay.
And probably racism is one of the biggest issues that we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't respond based on the age or the ethnicity, ancestry, or any of that,
mm-hmm.
anything gender, with respect to the customer coming in the door or calling. We basically assist based on what the issue is.
Mm-hmm. So age, mm-hmm. if someone came in and felt that they were being discriminated because of their age,
right,
you would
mm-hmm.
be
right.
amenable to that. And then
right.
how about sex or
it
sex
doesn't make
orientation?
A difference.
Doesn't make a difference.
Again, let us go back to the fundamental rights of individuals, which under Title VII of the Constitution, there are a certain group of protected classes. And so what we do is try to empower individuals
mm-hmm.
to, one, be able to achieve self-determination with the knowledge of their rights and the utilization of certain entities, be it the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, it may be the Civil Rights Division of the FBI, it may be the Police Commission. You know, there are several entities that these individuals can achieve self-determination through legitimate infrastructure.
And then, so the organization would offer some guidance or some assistance to...
Yes.
And
yes.
How about a handicapped person or a person with disabilities? Is there...
Okay.
Do you advocate, does the NAACP advocate for that group of people?
All persons who are protected under the Constitution, and in the case of disabled or handicapped individuals, then the Americans with Disabilities Act is there as the beacon which we can stand upon and say this individual is being disenfranchised or denied a reasonable accommodation, and the law says this. So that becomes, again, another source of empowerment.
Mm-hmm. And I, the reason I'm touching on these many occasions, mm-hmm. When I engage in conversation about the NAACP or a question about it, they ask, well, it's just about color and it's about race, and this is just the greatest opportunity afforded us to have you to share with those, because there are people out there don't know where to go.
True.
And if nothing other than getting guidance, that the NAACP can steer them in the right area, the Civil Rights Commission, or if they need to obtain a lawyer or something of that nature. And speaking of that, religion, would you have any advocating role in religion where there's discrimination? How could you help someone in that situation?
When it comes to religion, we have to be very honest here. The NAACP does not have an advocacy role with respect to religion. It is probably one of the protected classes that we don't have a role involved in. However, doing what we do with all other complaints that come in the office or in to us, our awareness, we tend to empower individuals with respect to what are their First Amendment rights. And one of those protected rights is the freedom of religion. And if an individual feels as though they've been denied a reasonable accommodation or some other due process because of their religion, then we assist in the education of that individual and the referral of that individual to an appropriate redress agency, i.e. the Civil Rights Commission or the EEOC or some other entity that can help them facilitate their claim.
If I were to ask you, how would you gauge the climate here? What score would you give the climate of discrimination, and here in Hawaii, for example? Are you able to gauge it? Are we doing good, bad, or can we do better?
Unconditionally, so I would say that we can do better, even if it was less than 1%, because there is still a mark in the direction of negative. We've had incidents. I would say that we can do better. I think that in all reality, we have to look outside of Hawaii and say, in comparison to the mainland, that we have a smaller percentage of racism and discrimination and disenfranchisement. Now, what we need to do is take full inventory and say that because of the imagery that comes along with the aloha spirit, then it is unfortunate that we have such a volume of discrimination and racism prevalent here in Hawaii. So if anyone is under the guise that there is no racism in Hawaii, then they're seriously misled. I think that we are trying to do things in the right direction and work towards the eradication of racism and discrimination. But we have sufficient disparities to let us know that there is much work to be done mm-hmm. in order for us to achieve full equality.
And on that note, you as an individual, mm-hmm. Aside from the structured approach from the NAACP, what guidance or wisdom would you share or can you share with the listeners out there, what that they can do in their daily activities to prevent it, to discourage it, and to make things better here as individuals? What could you offer as an insight?
As individuals, I believe that we have the opportunity to become more enlightened and educated about civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the complacency of Aloha has caused us to not be cognizant of the fact that we are perhaps discriminating or we are perhaps emulating those racist behaviors that may not be what is our true core culture. And I think that if we took the time to learn more about other cultures, about individuals, and how it is that we may work more in harmony and have basic respect for each other as human beings, I think that we could erase a lot of the front line racism and discrimination that takes place.
And so you're advocating tolerance. Wouldn't that be one of the key components?
I would say that when we look at certain protected classes, tolerance is a word that is associated with it. In other words, I may not like the particular style that you wear your hair. However, it may be indicative of your ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
I may not particularly care for the genre of music that you care for, mm-hmm. but it is indicative of your heritage and it perpetuates the legacy that you are proud to move forward. So what it is it simply boils down to, I need to take time and learn you, the individual. I need to, in our exchanges, meet you where you are as a human being. And then I think that we will find that we have a lot of commonalities. And through that exchange, we can eradicate a lot of the racism that we're experiencing right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for the listeners out there, this is the Carol Cox Show. I have Mr. Alfonso Braggs, president of the NAACP here. And if you'd like to call in, have any questions or any information you'd like to share with us, call us at 524-1080. And as always, you can pick this up at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. The NAACP has been in the forefront, I should say, many, many, many years back and currently. Some people occasionally will say that it's old school or
mm-hmm.
it's not politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an issue of being politically correct, or we have to acknowledge what it has done and its purpose? Still, there is a purpose for having it?
I would say, again, unconditionally so, that the NAACP, its mission and its values and what we've stood for over these past 100 years is very relevant today. It is probably more relevant in 2009 than it was in 1909, because in 1909 it was a general accepted policy or practice and behavior in America, for the most part, to discriminate and to have prevalent racism and disenfranchisement across the nation. In 2009, when we have the first African-American president sworn into the greatest nation in the world, and we still have racism and discrimination being practiced in the workplace, in the hospitals, in the police agencies, and in our schoolrooms, I think that there is clear evidence that the objectives of the NAACP is very relevant.
Mm-hmm. So this, the joy of seeing Mr. Obama serving as president is that, not for what I see and the good mm-hmm. feeling that I get, but imagine the children of tomorrow
mm-hmm.
coming along and seeing that now America, it's always been good and the promises have been great, Mm-hmm. But imagine that positive message that's being sent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, me personally, I say to the kids, well, if you want to walk around with your underwear showing down your pants, well, okay, now you can't blame it on the system.
Right.
Because you can achieve just about anything. We've taught it, but now it's a reality.
It is indeed a reality. And the one thing that I would echo on that is that I don't want us to think as American, as a nation, and as a world that because we have elected the first African American in the United States of America, that the system is no longer to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. As citizens and responsible citizens of this democracy, our obligation is to continue to hold the system accountable until we do achieve the goals and intents of our founding fathers, and in particular, the eradication of those disparities that have caused us such demise.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we have elected Barack Obama as the first African-American or minority president, period, in our nation's history is simply one check in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it is landmark, sweeping, and something to have full joy about.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it does give us cause and pause to say that, you know, I have a personal responsibility now to be a better citizen because, you know, there's someone that looks like me, walks like me, and talks like me that's sitting in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's not just an African-American president. He is the president of all the United States. And so his values are not just black values or African-American values. They are American values.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an opportunity for us to embrace what is America and what it is that we can take pride in. And I think that the apprehension in the past has been that there hasn't been someone to give us that.
Yeah.
And so when we see the first family, when we see children that look like our children playing in the White House, we get a sense of America is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be an integral part of that change. And that means that we have to not only continue to remain steadfast in our pursuit for democracy and equality and justice, but we have to make sure that we are more responsible citizens.
And you know, what this means is that the path to the White House has been cleared.
Mm-hmm.
We now can, it's not a dream any longer, women.
Mm-hmm.
People of Asian mm-hmm. ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
It's all possible. We knew that it was possible,
mm-hmm.
but this is the first step in it becoming a reality that it's not off limits to anyone.
And you're correct about that. And I think that when we look at Hawaii and we look at the election of the first in our state government of certain ethnic groups being able to ascend as the chief executive of the state, when we look at certain ethnic groups being able to be sworn into the United States Congress as the first of a particular ethnicity and representation, I think that we can celebrate those achievements and take personal pride in the fact that we are doing some things that are allowing us to recognize ancestry, to recognize the unique contribution of certain ethnic groups. However, again, I bring us back to we cannot celebrate in the sense that the work is complete,
right,
because it is not complete. I think that we need, if anything, it should be a call to action to say that the work that we are involved in can result in positive results in change,
mm-hmm.
and it should motivate us to continue that change.
Well, I'm reminded just yesterday, they announced it today, that the Houston, Texas has
right.
the first openly gay.
Right.
And while we should be excited about it, we should also be reminded that there are those elements of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And the discrimination came in the form of one's sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone a long way, come a long way,
mm-hmm.
but then there's so many hurdles, and any hurdle impacting anyone in a form of discrimination or denying them the right to be
mm-hmm.
true Americans and openly be what they are, that's legal, we always need to worry, continually.
And that is true. I mean, when we look at the election results in Houston yesterday, I think that there's a significantly group of people in that area and across the nation and around the globe that are celebrating the fact that an openly gay person, you know, has achieved in what is considered to be a rather conservative community, a group of people. And you know, the same, no doubt, when, you know, San Francisco did the same. But I bring us back to the point that our true achievement is met, or our goals are met, when we can elect an individual, not because of their particular affiliation, but because of the democratic principles upon which they stand. So when we can move away from saying that we have an African-American president, that we have an openly gay mayor, or that we have a Asian-American, you know, representative here, when we can move away from those adjectives and just simply say that, you know, this individual is the best individual or candidate or representative because of their fundamental beliefs and commitments, mm-hmm. I think then we can start to celebrate what we've achieved.
Yeah, there's still these elements out there of discrimination. I go back to a story recently, in a couple of years now. I visited Tupelo, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I got relatives down there, and I was there to take some pictures of the... my niece was a homecoming mm-hmm. queen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was great, and I get there, and unbeknownst to me, in the school, it's no longer segregated,
mm-hmm.
but what was shocking was that they had a black homecoming queen and a white homecoming queen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, when we say, well, the NAACP, it's old school, and they just need to shut the door and... This is a reminder mm-hmm. that, no, it is not just politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
It is timely that it continue to be. Someone, there has to be a watchman.
Mm-hmm.
Because organizing individuals is more difficult than having an existing organization to just constantly monitor and evaluate and react when there's a time, make an organized or legal effort to address these issues.
And I agree again, and this is a good sterling example of why it is that we have to have the watchman on duty in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that would not have been something that our attention would have been drawn to in 1909.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ask the question, is the NAACP still relevant today? And we look at Jenna 6, and we look at Troy Davidson and Georgia, and we look at other huge cases. We look at the disparities that are being suffered by individuals trying to become homeowners, just trying to become a regular part of the American dream. And unfortunately, the system is not allowing everyone to enter the door.
Mm-hmm.
So while the glass ceiling on the White House has been broken, the responsibility of us as Americans is to ensure that we are still holding those opportunities open within the context of our Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't want to sit and portray the NAACP as been solely in this, but there are bigger issues and more worldly and globally mm-hmm. the NAACP is tackling mm-hmm. and participating in and advocating. For instance, the Copenhagen Climate. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with us what the NAACP is doing and its concerns with some of the fallout of global warming and all of those issues?
Well, I think that a very, very good question, and I think that it helps to educate America when they see that civil rights organizations are fully engaged in global issues such as global warming. And the relevant part of the NAACP being involved in that is that we cannot achieve full democracy and equality for all if we don't address all those issues that create disparities.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we look at what is the impact of global warming. It means that individuals are going to have to spend more money to try and maintain an acceptable standard of living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cost of gas, all of those things attribute back to what it is that has disenfranchised disparate groups. And so, yes, there is a relevant role for the NAACP to play in helping this nation as well as a global economy become more green, a global people become more green.
Now, there are other issues in other areas you're working. The NAACP is the financial concerns in the to the consumer.
Okay.
What is happening with the... There was an involvement in the Financial Protection Agency in the building of it or the founding. Can you tell us about that?
Not necessarily specific on that, but let me say economically and financially where the NAACP has been standing strong on. It's important for us if we are to ensure equality for all citizens that every person has a right to achieve self-determination in the sense that if I work hard, I should be able to own a home. I should expect that those consumer protection agencies out there are going to help protect me when, you know, there are phony loans out there, when I get caught up in it, and now I'm about to lose my home. Because I'm going to lose my home, it's going to impact my child being able to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm upper middle class, and now I don't qualify for certain financial aid. All of those disparities come back to what is the fundamental protection that the NAACP has been advocating.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look for those particular situations where there is a disenfranchisement of those individuals who are trying to move up the economic level, as well as those who are, you know, just regular mom and pop who are surviving or barely surviving. So across the board, we're looking at how it is that we may advocate and work with those agencies
mm-hmm.
to achieve full equality.
And, you know, we have the health care issue,
mm-hmm.
the national health care
mm-hmm.
bill that is being bantered about and
right.
the struggle to get it passed. Is there any involvement on the part of NAACP in that, and to what degree?
Well, we stand very strongly on the fact that we must have health care for all persons. Affordable health care is clearly one of the top reasons why we believe that full equality can be achieved. Examples. If we can eradicate the fact that people are no longer having to choose between their high blood pressure medications and putting food on the table, they're not having to choose between whether or not I can't afford this particular procedure, or I cannot go and get this mammogram, or I cannot go and get this checkup. The end result of that is a higher economic burden on society as well as other family members and friends. And so if we can have a health care program across the nation that removes some of those stigmas and disenfranchisements, then we have moved closer towards those individuals living a healthier life and therefore being a more productive citizen, being able to give back to the nation.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the people out there, listeners, occasionally will state that we're really advocating nothing more than handouts and welfare, and that's not the case here. We're looking for equality and equity and what's right. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The bottom line is that if we are tax-paying citizens here, that things in America for tax-paying citizens should be affordable. It should not be that a particular industry or entity is able to capitalize on the disparities of others. A prime example, if we make the cost of medicines so high that it becomes only affordable to the elite group, That is a tremendous disenfranchisement. And the consequence of that is that you have more people suffering from systemic issues and driving up the problems that we're having right now with Medicare, Medicaid, with other health care costs. And so it is about equality. It's about balancing the opportunity of all citizens.
Well, I know we afford many of people to, we invite them to come here, so we should take care of our own. And I don't mean take care by pulling up in a truck and handing out food, but clearing the path of the obstacles, of the disparity and the discrimination that exists. That's basically, even for myself as a young person growing up, I didn't want handouts.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted a clear pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I succeeded, I succeeded. If I failed, it would be on my own failures or my own choices. But it's difficult when you try to navigate this pathway when there are people purposely placing obstacles in your way because of your race or because whatever you are, you look different, or your religion, what have you. And hopefully, one day in my lifetime, and I don't know if it's possible,
mm-hmm.
but we can look down a pathway and there those obstacles that are out there, whether it's sexual discrimination, sexual orientation, whether it's religion, basically, in a simple sense, mind our own business.
Mm-hmm.
And let the other person be, right?
Well, that's the true goal of full justice and equality, and an end to these systemic disparities that are creating the problems and the divide right now that we have in America. And truly, the goal is to achieve a sense of self-determination. And I think that you touched on a real important point for our listeners to take inventory of, and that is that Americans are not trying to seek a handout. As a matter of fact, our nation's capital, we look at some of the greatest things that has happened in America and achievements, and they were not done so that these individuals would receive a handout. There's a tremendous sense of pride in serving our great democracy. The Tuskegee Airmen, African-American men and minority men, Native American men and women all across have served this country bravely. And those individuals didn't do it because of a handout. They did it, the Buffalo Soldiers, for example, they did it because they believed in the Constitution. Those individuals did it, and unfortunately, they served and achieved the goals of this nation and came home to great indignities and disenfranchisement. It's a shame that they could be awarded the highest awards that they could issue in France and come home and not be able to hold their head up high as a citizen of this nation.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not about a handout. It is about equality. There is a right, an inherent right, that they have to be an equal participant in the American dream, and that's simply the goal of the NAACP.
Yeah. Well, one other point that for me personally, I get incensed that on occasion when I hear people discriminate against because of sexual orientation, and they say that it's wrong biblically and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But that same thing was stated about interracial marriages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it was wrong, and in fact it was illegal. And if you now know that Jack Johnson, the famous boxer,
of course,
they're seeking a pardon, but he was arrested and charged,
of course,
for having married a lady that was white, and in turn mm-hmm. taking her
across
state,
state line. Right.
And while some may say, well, no big deal, it's really a big deal in that if we allowed that, and then it changed. We finally came to our senses and found out that if two people love one another,
mm-hmm.
that's their business.
And you're right about it. It is the fact that it is their business. And we have to move to a point of equality where we're not denying an individual based on a preference or a particular belief that is either based on religion or whatever. We need to go straight to the Constitution and see what it says that we are entitled to. And it says, we the people, we being all inclusive, you know, are entitled to these particular things. And so I think that our Constitution is the greatest example of democracy around the globe. And so if we simply embrace what are the rights of those within the Constitution, I think that we'll be a better nation. The flip side of that also is that we as citizens have to be responsible and respectful of one another.
Right.
And I think that somehow or another we've gotten a little bit too liberal in the sense that we believe that your business is my business and I have a right to get into what is going on in your house. And so I think that the moment that we start to pull back and take inventory of ourselves and look at what it is that we're doing to make this nation a greater nation, I believe that we'll be better.
Yeah. And the amount of nonsense that is tossed around out there, and I don't want to belittle this subject, but I look at it. I've had some friends, or I call them friends, but they say, well, if we let gay people marry and they move in your neighborhood, it's bad for the neighborhood. Well, how can it be bad for the neighborhood? And if it's going to ruin your marriages, well, if that's the case, then if your husband is going over there and it ruins the marriage, then something's wrong there, right? There's a discrimination. You toss up anything, any nonsense, just to create an argument, when if you've stood back and paid real attention to it, it's all crazy, it's nonsense. And again, back to what I said, let people be. As long as it's legal, and then it's in their own private lives and in their own homes, whatever it is, you know. But when you then impact others, and, you know.
Well, I think that America has to take a look at something. For example, in Uganda right now, they are considering making a federal statute that would make it illegal to practice homosexuality in that country. And it could result in life sentences for people. I think that what we have to do as Americans with respect to this particular topic, again, is go back to what are the inherent rights of citizens with respect to the Constitution. And the NAACP is concerned that all persons are able to fully exercise their rights under the Constitution. Because if we don't, we're going to continue to have systemic disparities. And those disparities are the result of problems in economics, problems in housing, problem in health, problems in education. And so, you know, when we look across the board, we're able to see a continual need for organizations like the NAACP to be fully engaged in making sure that the intents of the founding fathers are being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. And what is happening? I see that the future is bright in addressing, and I'm encouraged by discrimination in any form. I'm not advocating for any particular group. It's just that if it exists in any form, that means it'll exist tomorrow. It may start to impact me. Because if we tolerate it, that's the issue. If we tolerate any form of discrimination, that's what causes concern. I don't particularly look at every aspect of it, but any form of discrimination causes concern to me.
Well, we need to take inventory of the word subtle. In 1909, things were more blatant. In 2009, racism and discrimination and these origins of disparities are more subtle. They're creative, strategic processes that individuals have chosen to exercise in order to achieve their selfish goals of racism and discrimination. And a lot of the accusers are basically becoming more knowledgeable to achieve loopholes and workarounds so that they get the same result except for now it's under the guise of something else. But at the end of the day, it is truly subtle racism and discrimination. And so our responsibility is to become just as learned as they are about how to eradicate these unique strategic maneuvers that end up in creating disparities.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the criminal justice system, you know, in the denial of certain public accommodations, or, you know, treatments with respect to health care. You know, some of these awful incidents of how these homeowners lost their homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we are not fully engaged and taking inventory of what's going on in America, mm-hmm. then guess what? We are going to continue to suffer.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about some of the local things you're doing and mm-hmm. events, but I'd like to just add one bit of insight, or I don't want to cause any disturbance out there, but something I give thought to a lot is that, you know, a foreign person can come and serve in the United States Army, a military.
Mm-hmm.
And as a condition of that, they can be granted citizenship or be welcome here for serving in the military.
You mean an individual who comes to America and
from a
has...
a foreign country, Mexico, or whatever.
True. Okay. Which is the American dream.
Right.
And that individual then subsequently, as a person living in America,
right.
a person working towards citizenship,
right.
decides to then become a part of the uniformed services.
Right.
Now, okay.
The flip side of that is what causes me a little grief is that an American citizen born here and is a citizen
mm-hmm.
can serve in the Army, a military, but if he discloses or finds that he is gay or homosexual or whatever his sexual orientation is, he could be kicked out. He or she could be kicked out.
Well, any person.
Well, I understand.
Right.
But the point is that it's kind of funny that we will welcome foreigners to come here while our own people have to serve under conditions. And I personally believe that is a form of discrimination, in that we should, if an American citizen, regardless of his orientation or mm-hmm. her orientation, on the don't ask, don't tell, it should be done away with. Period. And it should not be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess my only issue on that one or comment on that one is I don't know that I don't see necessarily the full correlation between a non-citizen, because, again, I'm going back to where individuals who were citizens were not recognized as citizens at home, but they served just as bravely and as proudly. So I think that, well, two things. One, I do know that the president is fully engaged in removing or completely overhauling the Don't Ask, Don't
mm-hmm.
Tell. And I think that the responsible role of citizens is to make sure that the president fulfills that commitment to the citizenry. And the other part on that is that I think that all persons, those individuals who put on this uniform and represent our democracy, should be afforded all the full rights.
Without
discrimination.
And see, when they go abroad, the Tuskegee Airmen come back home and they're
discriminated against.
And when the person here serves but has to be silenced and put a muzzle and can't be himself or herself, that is not the same.
The protection is under what the Constitution says.
I understand.
So that's what's being worked towards, is how
right.
to make sure that's fully protected.
But yeah, that's my point,
mm-hmm.
is that to do away with, this is just speaking to the subtleties and the nonsense
mm-hmm.
that exists out there, you know. So
right.
we just need to clear the slate completely
mm-hmm.
in addressing without any conditions. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
real quickly, tell us about some of the activities you do locally here.
Well, the events
that you have.
Okay, NAACP is engaged in the local community through our annual Dr. Martin Luther King program that we have, where we award 5 scholarships. Those scholarships are named after 5 African-American with Hawaii ties, and that way we perpetuate their legacy here.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the host of Juneteenth celebration. We engage throughout the year in different forums and platforms that allow us to talk about and provide a service on legal redress. We also do voter registration. We are declaring 2010 to be the year of the youth. And so it is about passing the torch, preparing tomorrow's leaders today. And if individuals want to call in, they can. They can call our office. It's a local number, and it's 599-5500. You can email the NAACP at naacphawaii@aol.com. Or you may visit our website at www.soulhawaii.com/NAACP.
Okay, Alfonso, thank you for joining me.
It's been a pleasure.
Anytime you'd like to come back, I think that people out there really don't know the impact and the influence that the NAACP even have in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings, access to the handicap and all of that, the Civil Rights Act.
Of course, the
right.
Voting Rights Act.
The Voting Rights Act. And
that's
so,
right.
So that's
education.
Why I tell, education, mm-hmm. tell people, it's not old school and it's not outdated. You benefit daily when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Work from the efforts of the NAACP and the likes of Dr. Martin Luther King and others, and all people that have gotten out there and fought and didn't just take it.
That's true.
And sitting down. So anyway, I appreciate you dropping in and talking with me anytime. It's always available to you.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate you helping us to celebrate this 100 years of service to our people.
All righty. Aloha, and thank you for joining us.
One little Christmas tree was standing alone, waiting for someone to come by. One little Christmas tree that never had grown quite as he looked up to the sky. Oh, please, Mr. Barber Tree, the tallest of all, I'm so afraid and so alone. Could one little Christmas tree, so tiny and small, light up someone's home? 'Cause one little Christmas tree can light up a home, so one little child can find a toy. One little Christmas tree can light up a home, so one little heart can find some joy. One little angel who was riding a star cried as she looked down at the tree. Oh, please, Mr. Father Tree, wherever you are, may I give him the star you gave to me. Then in the heavens came a voice from afar, a voice that was heard throughout the world. Go down, little angel girl, and give him your star. Tonight he'll light the world. 'Cause one little Christmas.
Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.